The following may contain offensive language, adult humor, and or content that some viewers may find offensive. The views and opinions expressed by any one speaker does not explicitly or necessarily reflect or represent those of Mark Rattledge or W2M Network. Please listen with caution, or don't listen at all.
TV party tonight!
What?
TV party tonight!
Oh! We got nothing better to do than watch TV and have a couple of brews.
Don't want to talk about anything else.
We don't want to know.
We're dedicated here
to our favorite shows.
Oh, my circuit!
Everybody loves Hypnotoad!
Gary Dawg!
Larson and Blurnville!
Futurama!
Good evening. You are listening to a Rattledge Broadcasting premiere podcast TV party tonight. I'm your host, the Mandated Reporter, and frankly, I'm mortified, Mr. Mark Rattledge. And tonight, our favorite show is Star Trek Lower Decks Season 4, brought to you by the good people at Paramount Plus and all those people that make the Star Treks. This the fourth season of Lower Decks is set in the 24th century and follows the adventures of the Lower Deckers, lower-ranking officers with menial jobs, on the starship Cerritos, one of Starfleet's least important starships. Hang on one second. Andrew just sent me a... joining us tonight is my co-host, David Wright. How you doing, David?
I'm doing good, thanks. I'm holding a baby, hoping she stays quiet, because that's how committed I am.
I remember my days of podcasting with a baby. That was, 13 years ago.
Yeah, I thought you took a year off.
Mike, oh, is Andrew supposed to be... Hang on. Are you supposed to be on lower...
difficulties.
Are you supposed to be on Lower Decks? So that's really funny. Andrew just asked me if he's, like, if there's a link to tonight's show, and I'm like, I didn't think you were on Lower Decks. I didn't think Andrew watched Lower Decks.
Oh, he's into the Lower Decks.
Hang on, I gotta send Andrew a. The link to the show. Oopsie.
Yeah. Yeah. One thing about our podcasting network, there is no behind the scenes. It's just like the Muppet Show. You get to see the chaos behind the camera and in front.
Yeah. Oopsie. My apologies, sir. All right, so as we're waiting for Andrew to come on here, yes, now I can get back into show host mode. All right, Lower Decks Season 4, which premiered on September 7th with its first two episodes, and the rest of the 10-episode run was released weekly, and a fifth season was ordered March of last year. So presumably, we'll get that this fall, I would imagine, and we'll come back and do this all again. Hopefully not almost a whole year later.
Yeah.
All right. So, threw off my entire rhythm. I was just telling somebody, my son asked me, I can mm-hmm. ban for a few minutes. My son was asking, he's like, what are you doing tonight? And I said, we're doing Star Trek Lower Decks. He's like, oh, what is that? How is that? Who is that? When is that? I said, well, there he is. The Avenger himself, Mr. Canada, Andrew Moopsie. Graham.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Oh, no, the Moopsie's out.
Oh, no.
Kick him out.
Goddamn Moopsies are running around, ruining my podcast.
Moopsie.
So let me finish with the Jonas thing, and then I will address you proper, Andrew. So my son goes, like, what are you doing tonight? I said, we're doing Star Trek Lower Decks. He's like, how is that? Is it any good? And I'm like, well, I love it. I'm as a Star Trek fan, but generally speaking, it's better than the usual tripe coming out of Paramount Plus when it comes to Star Trek. It's oddly, and I actually said this to Jesse last night, it's oddly one of the best written Star Trek shows going right now. And I say that with a full...
It's not a very high bar to clear.
I do that with a full disclosure that I have not watched a single episode of Discovery. That said...
James Cameron and his submarine couldn't find that bar.
So, Andrew, I completely forgot you were on this show. My apologies, sir.
No worries.
Are
we live, by the way?
We sure are.
Live, everybody.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've had a show like start up with this many trips and mistakes. So anyway, we were saying we're gonna get to Moopsie, but we're saving that for the back. We gotta save the best for last. Oh, yeah. We'll eventually get to Moopsie.
I have an addendum Moopsie story later on, but anyway.
Oh, you have an addendum Moopsie?
Yes, I do.
I once saw addendum Moopsie open up for Metallica in 1989 at the Nassau Coliseum.
Sounds like a promising young band.
I'm waiting for my daughter to just burst into my room. Okay, you old geezer. That's usually her line. Mm-hmm. All right, enough vamping. Let's get into the season, finally. Boys, there were two major and then a tertiary plot line that sort of drove this entire season. And we start off with the entire Lower Deck crew getting promoted, everyone except for Rutherford. And the big thing that came out of that was that... what's the character's name again? Mariner. Woof.
Yep.
Was that Mariner was promoted against her will by Ransom. And the first couple of episodes, she thinks that Ransom is purposely doing this just to get her kicked off the ship again. And so she goes full insubordination, you know, light insubordination to get herself demoted. What I liked about, and I'll let you guys weigh in on this, what I liked about the way they handled the Mariner Ransom stuff was it wasn't just sort of the light sort of devil may care, ne'er-do-well Mariner that we've known from previous seasons. They kind of dig into her self-sabotaging. They dig a little bit into her psychology in terms of why is she unwilling to allow herself to be promoted to ascend in Starfleet. The previous season, Dave, they dealt with her sort of struggling with whether or not she wanted to be in Starfleet, and she ultimately did, but she did not want to move from her comfortable spot of being a lower decker. And Ransom is like, no, you have too much potential for this and you're being a nutcase. And then later on we find out why. So I'll let you go first, David, and then Andrew. Let's talk about your thoughts on Mariner getting promoted and how they handled it this season with her and Ransom.
Yeah. Well, starting off overall for the season, this is where they're sort of addressing the core hurdle that they need to overcome is you have a show where everyone is the lowest rank, but they're also getting really good at their jobs. So inevitably they have to get promoted. This is how this works.
Yeah.
So then, you know, like, how do you keep the show being lower decks as they start moving up to the higher decks?
Interesting because, like, the Simpsons have all stayed the same age for 20 odd years.
Yeah.
Meanwhile,
yeah, they make a joke that Bart's been in grade 4 for about 20 years now.
Yeah, that's the funny thing about it is they absolutely could have kept them there, but to feel like, you know, to feel like the show actually has some sort of rhythm and rise to it. Oh, what does she need?
Oh, do we have a podcast co-host here?
Yes,
we sure
yes.
do.
Yeah, aww. she's dealing with the bottle here.
So yes, little David's joined us. little girl David.
Now there's a frightening thought.
But they absolutely could have kept it where they don't. But it'll end up becoming, and this becomes the problem with a lot of shows. Andrew. Is that it doesn't feel like the show's ever going anywhere. It's just, well, what hijinks are they getting into this week with no progression? Without progression, I'm not entirely sure there's a lot of buy-in.
Absolutely. And I mean, I think that they have that so much baked into the characters where it's like you have, I'm sorry, I'm coming right off this, so I'm not even prepared, but it's like you have...
Describe character and I can tell you their name probably.
Well, I was going to say, you have, where's the character list? Damn it.
Kendi, Rutherford, Mariner,
Boimler. Sorry.
Yeah.
Robert Boimler, who of course is just, you know, super eager to get promoted. You've got kind of Mariner, whose entire conflict is about being promoted or not being promoted. And if you never promote her, then that conflict never comes up.
Right.
And then you have kind of both, you know, Rutherford, who I think is happy doing just about anything. And then Tendi, who I think is ambitious, but not ambitious about rank, but ambitious about her own science skills. And
yeah, she just wants to do science. Like,
sorry?
And Rutherford, yeah, Tendi wants to do science. Rutherford wants to do engineering. As long as they can keep doing more of that, they're happy.
Yes, exactly. And no piracy on Tendi's part. She does not want to do piracy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We'll get to Tendi's arc. Yeah.
I think what an interesting sort of subsect of that dramatic tension is that the gang doesn't want to get broken up either.
No, yeah. They don't.
because I was thinking about like the original Star Trek, Star Trek Enterprise fleet, where once we got into the movies, Spock was a captain, mm-hmm. Kirk was an admiral.
Sulu
eventually becomes a captain. Like everyone gets split up amongst the Enterprise crew, and it's only, you know, it's always off camera, by the way. You know, they bring them back together for one reason or another when we get to the actual movie. But the story, the lore is that post the original series TOS, that whole crew got split up and put on different ships or were promoted or whatever. So it's a very real thing for these, for this gaggle of friends to feel like, well, you know, we want to ascend in Starfleet, but we don't necessarily want to leave each other. But that might just be the name of the game, David.
Yeah. Well, even I think in, was it Nemesis? Picard says, like, I've had to trade every favor I have with the Admiralty to keep this crew together.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, they even stopped questioning how Worf keeps showing up despite being on Deep Space Nine.
What are you doing? He just walks
on the bridge.
What are you doing here, Worf? A very brief cameo.
Just
about him and me all this time.
Yeah, like, I think it was like, first contact, he's like, he was part of the battle, and then insurrection, mm-hmm. he was attending a seminar or something. Nemesis, he's just here.
Aren't you supposed to be a Deep Space Nine? It's a living.
Anyway, best prune juice in the fleet. I would not bypass the Enterprise to avoid it.
Prune juice chilled. Okay. Yeah. Like you certainly have that with Rutherford, where the joke is he's not promoted and he's trying to get promoted, but he just can't because there's another engineer that keeps on impressing everyone. He's like, it's too bad I refused all those promotions from all the other times I saved the ship because I wanted to stay the same rank as you guys.
Right.
Yeah.
And then he gets the slow motion throwing of the
So they did a good job in that they just kind of like gave everyone one promotion, like, so they're still lower decks, just a little bit up. They've gone from all bunking together to bunking two to a room, and Mariner's. I'll let you go in a minute.
Yeah, it's fine.
Mariner's whole thing is like, you know, they promoted me. What are they up to? They're out to get me. Like her self-sabotaging paranoia. I mean, they do the trope where she like hears a conversation out of context and thinks it, and then, you know, assumes the worst. With Boimler, where they get to in a few episodes, is where he has to learn how to let go of being at the bottom, to learn how to trust his team and delegate responsibility.
Yeah, that's a great episode. What they do with Boimler there, where he has to learn to trust his team, is really good stuff. What I was starting to get to, Andrew, was that there's a really funny gag with Boimler and Rutherford. It's first with Boimler, where they keep putting, now that he's an upper decker, you know, they're out of sleeping in the hallway. They get to have cabins now, they get to have rooms. Mm-hmm. And they keep putting him in like the worst room possible. And it's funny, going back to my son, he was asking me like, what is this show? And I said, well, it's an adult animated Star Trek show. And he goes, and I'm like, no, not that kind of adult, you pervert. he is a Rattledge after all.
Yes, yes.
I was like, no, I mean, it's just meant for adults. It's not, you know, it's not a kiddie show, because he also remembered, I think it's Star Trek Prodigy, that was just, you know, strictly for kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But what I was getting to was, so the show is not dirty in any way. It's not vulgar.
No, on occasion.
I mean, there's some stuff, but we're talking like the lightest of light in terms of adult oriented.
Meanwhile, the worst thing gets is when Boimler gets the room between the holodecks.
Well, that's what I was going for. I was like, Jesus Christ. I'm like, are they having sex? What is she doing to him? and this is me going, you know, like clutching my pearls, you know, Mr. Pervert. Like, and I was like,
hey, what happens on the holodeck stays on the holodeck.
You ain't kidding, Buster.
Someone gets tagged with holodeck cleaning duty.
Can I, just as an aside, because I was definitely thinking about this, and I debated whether or not I was going to even bring it up on the show tonight. Andrew, do you watch The Orville at all?
I love The Orville.
Okay, good. Do you guys?
Yeah, I watched all three seasons.
Okay, and David, you've reviewed every season with us about, so.
Yeah.
So I can make this comparison, you guys will stay with me. But Lower Decks doesn't feel like a Star Trek show anymore. It feels like an animated Orville show. Like, the tenor of the show, the way that they speak to each other, the humor in it, like, somewhere along the line, this split from what conceptually we now see today as modern Star Trek, and it feels more like the Orville. And you're both giving me quizzical looks, so bring it on.
I'm kind of, maybe I'll take a first run at that one. I find that an interesting comparison because I think I've probably made that in my brain itself.
Mm-hmm.
That was a really weird way of phrasing that, but whatever. The thing about it is that, yeah, it doesn't quite feel like, you know, a normal quote unquote Star Trek show. But I mean, one of the things that one of the reasons I'm so affectionate towards the show is because it has such a deep love of Star Trek. Very much like the Orville, and very much.
I would liken it more to Galaxy
really
Quest.
Deep dives back into like old Star Trek lore and a lot of old TOS stuff. Like there's some jokes in there where it's like, oh, what planet are we going to this week? Is it run by a baby, a computer, or a volcano?
The anthropology team are not sure their system of government. We're thinking 50-50 chance, psychic baby or evil supercomputer.
But turns out there's all these deep cuts, and it's kind of funny because I watch it with Alicia, and she knows TNG fairly well, but she's never watched Deep Space Nine, never watched Voyage or anything like that. And there's just these moments where they'll just mention something, and I'll fall off the goddamn couch.
Right,
it's just that funny. But I mean, I think, and I mean, to some extent, the Orville was like that because the Orville had a lot of references and a lot of structure to older Star Trek series, and I think it was really done as kind of a love letter to it.
Yeah,
and I mean, I think
it was definitely Seth MacFarlane doing the Blackjack and Hookers version of Star Trek. It was like, I want to do a Star Trek show. Well, you can't, Seth MacFarlane. You're the Family Guy guy. He's like, well, fuck it. I'm going to make my own. And it was absolutely done with love of Star Trek, but just feeling like, well, I can't be in Metallica, so I'm gonna be in. So I'm gonna start Megadeth instead. And that's kind of for me. Thank you. That's kind of for me the Star Trek Orville split. And it's not. And I'm with you all the way, Andrew. Lower Decks absolutely writes with Star Trek lore in mind. It's one of the few shows that are out there that I think respects its own IP. Really, one of the few that respects its own IP. We have documented this a lot in our private chat. That so much of modern IP, it's kind of they're just doing their own thing and they don't look back on what made it, why fans loved it in the first place. And the Lower Decks is definitely retaining what we love about Star Trek and putting it forward. But I think about like the humor and I think about some of the more philosophical, finer points. Like I don't want to talk too much about the Orville, but like we did at least two shows on transgender babies because of the Orville. And here in Lower Decks, you're dealing with Mariner, who has a lot of trauma from having lost her friend, and you know, and that being sort of a block for her in terms of wanting to get promoted. You have Tendi wrestling with her pirate identity and wanting to define herself of something else, and does kind of a just when I think I'm out, they pull me back in thing. You have Boimler who, and this is going, we started this tangent because I was thinking about sex and Star Trek. That joke about the cat doctor and the security captain, like having sex in the weirdo BDSM sex in the holodeck, cosplaying as Robin Hood or whatever they were doing. That was a very Orville joke. That's what I was trying to get at.
Exactly. And I mean, I think a little bit of it is, and it's kind of interesting to think about that you bring up some of the issue episodes that they did. And I mean, I can't remember which one it's titled, but it's the one where they're on the social media planet.
Yeah, like,
that's
great.
Orville was exceedingly good.
Majority rule.
Yeah, majority rule. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Orville was exceedingly good at actually being able to do kind of those social commentary Star Trek episodes again. And it's interesting because that was more kind of plot and story driven in a lot of ways. And a lot of ways, Lower Decks is character driven almost so.
Definitely. Way. Yeah. It's not very big idea sci-fi or social issues. Yeah. It's all
big ideas and big pieces through the characters themselves. Like, I mean, like, you know, I think we started to talk about Mariner. Like, we can get into her and talk about how she's got this. I think there's a degree of self-doubt. I think there's a degree of trauma because I think it was also inferred pretty heavily in the later in the season that, oh yeah, she was crewing during the Dominion War in combat zones. And there's a whole bunch of things weighing on her psyche on why she never wants to get promoted.
I would almost disagree with you guys. I agree that Lower Decks is character driven, but I would disagree that it's not getting into big ideas. The big ideas just tend to be less political, philosophical, and more mental.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, yeah, like interpersonal sort of big ideas.
I mean,
yeah.
The show deals heavily with trauma. It just, it's so funny because it's like, when you think about what Lower Decks is, it's by the guys that, you know, that do Rick and Morty in both in both tenor and animation style. But so it's kind of hard to see the seriousness in which the topics are dealt with because it's so silly. But they're absolutely there. I can't dismiss them out of hand. You know, again, Mariner's struggle with Ransom is that I don't put me in the position of getting killed because I've moved too far ahead in Star Trek, because that's ultimately where every road leads in her mind. Yep. And she's not wrong. Like,
it's a joke. It's like,
yeah.
Like, go third ahead. Episode, it's like Boimler dies. Ah, you never forget your first away mission, death.
Yeah. Okay. I have to talk about that since you brought it up. I had an agenda. Let's just throw the agenda out the window. So, if you'll remember, Robert and I screamed at the top of our lungs, and then we came back to the scream. It was mostly about the Beastie Boys, but let's forget about that for a second. We also screamed about... See, I thought like David was going to twitch there for a second.
I'm okay. Thanks for asking.
The what was it? Tribble blood or whatever the fuck they used to bring?
Oh God!
The con blood of the genetically altered superhumans that cures all diseases.
Yes. Yeah, so Star Trek
Darkness did not happen in this dojo.
Okay, you can bang a shoe and in your communist country all you want, but we're going to talk about this, Khrushchev, for the kids that didn't get that joke.
I'm sorry, that wasn't a burn, but if it was, I'd go look after that in my socialized healthcare.
Zing.
You better start waiting.
Moving on. So, for the kids at home, Into Darkness, Robert Winfrey and I, when we reviewed it those many years ago, and then back when David did the retrospective, we were saying how it takes the stakes right out of the movie when you can kill a guy and just bring him right back to life. I mean, my son railed about this with the Marvel movies, not to kick that dead horse. He was like, the 10-year-old picked up that everybody comes back to life in Marvel movies. There's no stakes, there's no tension to these things.
Except for Uncle Ben.
Except for Uncle Ben. And
she sat there with George and Martha Wayne going, what? What? Seriously?
No, Thomas Wayne has come back.
Sorry, Thomas Wayne. Yeah.
So
I stand corrected. Yeah. I will not debate Andrew on Batman lore. Yeah, I am way outgunned.
I'm going to have patched up both of you in a locker. So I struggled with Lower Decks because on the one hand, I get they're making fun of it. I get they're making fun of the fact that in the Star Trek world, we can now easily resurrect people. You know, easily bring them back to life. You know, the death has no meaning in the 24th century. On the other hand, it's then hard to buy into any dramatic tension because I'm sitting there like, so the episode where Boimler sacrifices himself, is it really a sacrifice? Because as long as they can find his charred up body, they can bring him back to life, which is hysterical because they make a joke about that too. Like the doctor brings him back and then they lose him once more. She's like, I just revived him. And it's like, I get it. It's funny. But also not a lot of tension there. And that's the only thing I'm going to point out about that is that at this point, it's so lampshaded that I can't buy in. Like when that stuff happens, I can't buy into the deaths.
Yeah. To be fair, the show doesn't really lean on death as the motivator for tension in a lot of situations.
You're not wrong. So just kind of closing out.
You know, more of a trial disguised as a party or something like that.
So just kind of closing out on Mariner, and then we can get into Tendi and sort of move this along. I liked her relationship with Ransom. If two cartoon characters can have sexual tension, they do. I think their connection's really, really strong and entertaining. And I like the fact that I was a little afraid with season three, David, that Ransom was gonna be too dimensional, that he was just gonna be like the dirty foil for Mariner, you know, it's like the evil teacher and Sean Penn from fucking Fast Times at Ridgemont High. It's just going to be that dynamic over and over and over again. And that's going to get boring. I like the fact that they made Ransom a decent fella here, and you know, he's vain, but who cares? He's a hot looking fella. You know, he's going to be that way. And he's like, no, I see potential in you and I don't want to see it wasted. And I don't understand why you're doing this to yourself. And then after a time, she reveals that. She goes through that, and Mariner, God help me, Andrew, grows as a character.
Oh, she does, and it's interesting. So you guys kind of brought this up, that this was coming up, and I kind of jumped in, and part of that reason was because Alicia and I were actually doing our second rewatch of the whole series.
Mm-hmm.
We were just about to get into it, and it's like, we watched the series through once, and it's like, Ransom's a dick. And then we watched it the second time, and it's like, Ransom's still a dick, but there's a lot more smaller moments with him where you actually see him, even in kind of his persona and his character and everything like that. He's still working to try and bring everybody up a little bit. You know, he's got this kind of low-level thing. And it actually, oddly enough, it actually reminded me of another Star Trek episode, which actually plays a lot later in the season, which is appropriately called Lower Decks, where you see some of Riker's interactions with some of a group of lower deckers on the Enterprise. And Riker's kind of a dick. But you also see his moments where he's actually kind of encouraging them and bringing them forward and things like that.
Not to go off on a tangent, but in defense of dicks, I don't think being a dick is the worst thing ever. You know, sometimes you have to be a dick in order to be a leader, which means you're not always going to be the most loved person, but it's the dicks that, you know, move things forward. It's the dicks that push people. Sometimes it's the dicks that get you to push yourself out of your own way. Do we always love these people? No, but we don't love people who make us uncomfortable, but it's the discomfort, you know, and Andrew, you know this, you know, rolling around with all your buddies half naked like you do. In the jiu-jitsu dojo.
It's the manliest of sports.
Absolutely, all sweaty. It's iron sharpens iron is what I'm trying to get at in my own stupid way. But that's the thing. It's like, yes, it hurts. It's uncomfortable. It sucks. But it makes us better people. And it's important. So in defense of dicks, I think we need them. And I think Ransom is the perfect kind of dick.
I think we're getting really, really close to a Team America retake right now. Yeah. There's three kinds of people.
Very close. God, I forgot all about that. That's hysterical.
Yeah.
All right.
Sort of final thought on Mariner. It's funny that you mentioned that episode Lower Decks, Andrew, because you remember they had that one character because she had to go on that super secret spy mission.
She's a huge part of it later in the season.
Yeah, and we mentioned that she was friends at the academy with Mariner, and that was the event that made Mariner not want to get promoted. She's like, if this is what it means to have responsibility, you know, to send people to die, I don't want that. I'll stay at the bottom forever. So, like, this was the time where we kind of needed to kind of get that last piece of Mariner's backstory together as to why she is the way she is. And like, it worked perfectly. And it was just fantastic that it was an actual callback to the episode Lower Decks.
Oh, as soon as that came up and they started referencing those characters, I'm like, what?
Yeah,
that was a brilliant callback. And not only was it a callback that was kind of like cute, but it was something that they also took and they made it emotionally impactful to the audience as well. I mean, it was very well done.
Yeah, I've heard the main criticism of Picard season 3, and this is, it's all member berries. It's all just referencing things that people know. And, to a degree, they are right. But what matters is they take those member berries and they do something bigger with it in the story. And this is a great example of doing that.
Yeah, and they had that great, you know, carry-on line with Tom Paris and then him getting booted out of Starfleet and then starting his own fleet.
Yeah. Though I don't think he looks like Tom Paris.
Are you sure? I'm pretty sure he looks like Tom Paris.
No, I don't see it. Okay. Do we want to just jump right into that now since we opened the door?
We're going to Tendi next.
Okay, we'll do Tendi and we'll loop back.
Yeah. Why don't we do
We'll always have Tom Paris.
Why don't we do the agenda that I set forth in the order that I set it forth in? Anywho. Yes, Tendi.
Go ahead.
Thanks. I'm going to run my podcast now. So Tendi in this season also gets promoted. And I can't remember, David, had they been hiding her entire origin up to this point? Like, is this the first season? I think she's like hinted at it in the past, but I think this is
not very subtle hints, but it's always been established that she is trying to hide it. And like, you even get the bit here. It's like, yeah, guys, like, I need to tell you something. I'm an Orion princess. It's like, yeah, we kind of figured that out.
Andrew, what were you saying?
Pretty big reference to that in the Deep Space Nine episode.
Yeah, that was probably the biggest. But there's been a couple of others where, like, I don't know, like Orion Sears, like, it's you sort of thing. And it's like, okay, like Tendi is, there's something going on in her backstory there.
So, yeah, Tendi's big plot thing, this plot story, arc. This season arc, thank you, this season is that she has, she's another one. And I want to say, like, there was a character in Deep Space Nine. It was a very similar thing. It was the one with the Leopard Prince that has.
Oh, Jadzia attacks.
Yeah, where she was another one. There's always one character in these shows I'm noticing. This is a kind of a pattern. And maybe you guys can speak to this a little bit more intelligently than I can. But there's always, I feel like there's always one character that they have in the main cast that comes from a race of people that want nothing to do with Starfleet and don't really belong there. But, you know, they're there to try to prove their mettle, or they're there because they don't feel like they belong in their own culture and they want to do something greater with their life. And so they do Starfleet. And that's kind of Tendi. Is she left her culture, she left her planet to be a part of Starfleet because what she really wanted to do was science, and that was the place to do it. And then through circumstance and happenstance, she finds herself in a position of having to confront her past. And it's the classic push-pull. You know, the people of her in her family and in her culture need her, want her, insist that she come back. And there she is going, no, I must forge my own way. I must do my own thing, David. I must, you know, I want to stay true to myself. This isn't really who I am. And I think it's an interesting, thing, because I think that's something we can all relate to in one way, shape, or form, where you know, you start to form your own identity as a teenager in the face of, you know, your family upbringing. And maybe sometimes the twain shall meet, and other times you don't fit in with your family at all and are doing everything possible to run the fuck away. And that's what's happening here with Tendi.
Yeah, I don't think it's as much she hates her family, but yeah, she's found her place. Like, yeah, she wants to be on the Cerritos. She wants to be with the gang, especially Rutherford, and yeah, just do science and live the Starfleet life. And
speaking of dorky sexual tension, by the way,
oh, that is just hilarious. The two of them together,
they are totes adorbs, because it's very much a will. Boy, that is the Sam and Diane of Star Trek. Will they or won't they? You know, just like, we're just friends. Yeah, well, but we're just friends.
They're just so beautifully, like, oblivious to it. Both of them. It's hilarious. It's like, no, yeah, let's be a couple. That's crazy. We're just friends. Okay, now let's go, like, recalibrate the plasma man injectors in the, you know, in the access panel. You just see, like, their legs sticking out. Yeah, as if they're, like,
really close when we do it. You know what it kind of reminds me of? The other Star Trek show that we did, the slightly more serious one.
Strange New Worlds.
Strange New Worlds, yeah. Spock and Nurse Ratched, or whatever her name
Nurse,
is.
Nurse Chapel.
Yeah. It's very much that. It's just like, no, we're not lovers.
Yeah, they do a lot more tension there, where it's like, yo, I love him, but he doesn't. He's not acknowledging me, and he's got a fiance, it's a full. Whereas this is just like, man, you guys are such a cute couple. Oh, we're still not a couple. And then, yeah, they're having fun with it.
Absolutely. Yeah. What's your thoughts, Andrew? Tendi, love, and Star Trek.
Yeah, I mean, Tendi's really, on some level, you know, one of the hearts of this show. I mean, she's kind of this. I don't know if she's necessarily the POV character, but I think, you know, she's somebody who's, like, just obviously paired with Rutherford, but it's, like, very different from everybody else, because she is very much about, like, Rutherford's happy to engineer, but Tendi still has that little bit of ambition too, where it's not only do I want to do science, I want to do science at the best level possible. So it's like, you know, put me in this science mentoring program and things like that. And she does have, like, that, you know, the whole conflict of her with her family and with her people and things like that is, you know, kind of an interesting one. And the episode where it was this season where they have to go back to her planet and rescue her sister, correct?
Yeah, yes. Orion.
My God, that episode's a riot.
it's the knife jar that.
The knife thing. And also, credit to the writers. What is it? Mistress of the Winter Constellation. That is one of the best titles you could ever come up for a character possible.
And I did like how even Mariner was a bit out of her depth there. Like, you know, she's the one who's like, you know, I know every back bar in the galaxy and how to deal with the criminal underworld. She's just getting stabbed in the shoulder the whole time. And it's just kind of nice to see that, you know, people have limits.
Yeah. And even
we all have
even
a bad
the episode day. With her and Boimler dealing with, I can't remember the two robots.
Yes, Peanut Hamper and Jeffrey Combs. Yeah, it's just
Jeffrey Combs.
Yeah, I love that the Daystrom Institute has a wing for malevolent computers. That's just
what is the name of it? Is it T'Lyn who is the Vulcan?
Yes, T'Lyn.
Okay, So is that, does anyone else get Kirstie Alley vibes from Star Trek The Wrath of Khan from her?
A bit. I mean, Vulcans are kind of Vulcan.
Sure.
She's also one of the most, I mean, Kirstie Alley's character in that one was also like probably one of the first times you saw a significant amount of time for a female Vulcan on screen. Yeah. So like the same way that Leonard Nimoy is that every other Vulcan is Leonard Nimoy, every other female Vulcan is that.
The other one she reminds me of is,
I think, or not.
Well, I was actually, anyway, you just put the words right out of my mouth, because I was actually thinking of Star Trek 6.
Yes.
Oh, gosh, what's her name from Sex and the City and Mannequin?
Kim Cattrall.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, and that's the thing. I think here's the problem. She has Kim Cattrall hair, but Kirstie Alley tendencies. It's kind of both.
Well, that character was originally supposed to be like the Kirstie Alley character. They just couldn't get her Kirstie back Alley. For it. So,
yeah.
So they basically made a new character to step into that role.
That's fair.
Which isn't the first time we're going to mention something like that happening on this podcast, by the way.
No, I want to talk about her really
quickly. Are you mean Lacan or Paris?
I don't know. Like they're so different. Yeah.
Oh my god.
Good going, Mark.
Anyway,
there's a lot behind that joke.
Yup. I want to talk about her really quick because she's my favorite character of the season.
Yeah.
She has some really great one-liners. First of all, I very much sympathize with her. She's like, I don't want to be here. I'm here to try to get back to where I really want to be. And her arc over the course of the season is finding that she actually loves these guys, and she very much enjoys being on the Cerritos. And she comes to realize that maybe it'd be better if I stayed here for a while. So I like her story. I like the way, you know, like, there's a tendency to make Vulcans robots, which I don't like, because that's not what they are. And I just think it's shoddy writing when they do that. Mm-hmm. I don't think over the great course of Star Trek writing, every writer has handled Vulcans well. I think it's handled exceptionally well with her, because to understand, this is more nerdy than what you two dorks were doing, but here we go. Okay. Let me shove the
gauntlet has been thrown down.
Let me shove myself into the locker.
Yeah.
There's a subtlety and nuance to Vulcan behavior that when it's not done right, misses the point of being Vulcan. And I think they nail it with her. That
I would absolutely agree with that.
Yeah, it's not that she's emotionless. It's there. She says it actually in the show, because I think Mariner kind of tweaks her nipples about it. Mm-hmm. She's like, oh, I thought you guys don't have any emotions. Like, we do. We just suppress them because they get in the way of logical thinking, and logical thinking is what gets you to the best course of action, you asshole. You know, it's implied. And I love that. I love the idea of sort of forward intellectualism that says, hey, let's not give in to the basest, most vice behaviors and emotions. Let's go ahead and be warriors and put that aside and focus on what is the best solution to solve these vast array of problems. And that is the essence of being Vulcan. And now I want to throw myself down a flight of stairs.
Yeah, that's pretty, that is some quality stuff there, Mark. I think we might have found ourselves a super nerdy TikTok reel right there.
I'm going to end it with me going, wee, as I go down the stairs.
Yeah, I mean, Vulcans are, they're hard to write. I mean, could you imagine what would happen if you had like the main character of a Star Trek show act like a Vulcan the whole time? Oh boy.
Go ahead, Andrew.
But to that end, like, I mean, Vulcans, I think, are hard because, or I mean, I think they work better when there's conflict. And I mean, so Lynn's kind of an interesting character because she's, with some of the other, like with Spock, for example, part of his conflict is rooted in the fact that he's only half Vulcan.
Right.
So he's half Vulcan, half human. And thus he's got kind of that natural two worlds. With Talyn,
I hate to put this word out there and say it this way, but everything about Star Trek is a euphemism or a metaphor for what's going on in reality, kind of like with X-Men and Marvel Comics. But Spock wasn't dealing with the emotion things is what goes into that character type. But what Spock really was what is it like to be mixed race? You know,
to some extent. But I think part of it's also, and I think that's a valid point. But I think with Talyn, what's interesting with her is that her conflict is entirely internal.
Yeah,
she doesn't have an outside driver. This is all within her, where it's like, you know, I'm a Vulcan, but I also think differently, and from a Vulcan point of view, I have a rebellious streak.
Right.
Yeah.
Which, you know, includes just, you know, changing the modulation of her voice by like half a note.
David, go ahead, jump in. I know you're chomping at the bit here.
Yeah, actually, I'm trying to rock someone to sleep, but thanks.
Jumping, yeah, rocking, whatever.
Yeah, but yeah, she's a bit of a nonconformist for a Vulcan, which is a society that's based very much on conformity. And you had her backstory be like the ship was in trouble and she did something to save the ship. I forget what. But it wasn't the logical thing to do, or it wasn't part of procedure. So she was kicked over to Starfleet as a punishment. And her whole thing is, I must distinguish myself in Starfleet, so they'll let me back in, you know, onto a Vulcan ship again. And sort of her moment comes when she's talking with Mariner and she's like, wait, so you didn't follow procedure, but what you did saved the ship. Like, the most illogical thing is to get rid of you because you had a better idea. So, like, basically, screw those guys. You know, you're better than them. And it's her sort of accepting that, you know, maybe it's okay to be a nonconformist Vulcan.
Well, inherent in the writing is a commentary on the lack of common sense. I know I've referenced this before, mm-hmm. and I won't go too far off a tangent with it, but mm-hmm. there was a book I read years ago. It was a conservative-leaning book. Please don't hate me, Canadians. But it was called The Death of Common Sense, and it was about, you know, we are such... I've talked about this before. We are mm-hmm. such slaves to process and rigmarole that we tend to not put forth the best solutions for problems. We tend to not do the common sense thing because we are so wrapped up in what's the word I'm looking for? I'm struggling with
convention and
government red tape and all of that. Mm-hmm. So, like, the example like given was that because of laws and processes, they weren't allowed to convert a church to an orphanage for some reason. Mm-hmm. And therefore there was no orphanage for children. You know, it was a very simple thing to just do this, and then boom, a home for children, and like you can't do it. So my point being, I think that's one of the nice things about the Talin character is that they kind of use her to say, hey, look, sometimes going against the grain, running up the down staircase is the answer. It is the most direct, you know, the most direct line to the best solution to the problem. And, you know, I think we as a society then have to ask, what's more important here? Solving problems or sticking to very comfortable processes? And it goes back to what we said about 20 minutes ago about, you know, there's something about being uncomfortable that can make us all better. And we run screaming from it very mm-hmm. often as people. So I like the fact that the show deals with some heady stuff. They just don't deal with it necessarily as deeply as some other shows. They sort of like touch on it. It's there. It gets people like us thinking about it. And then they go, okay, fart joke, which is great.
Yeah. And I mean, it's kind of interesting that we've gone here, because now that I think about it, like, this whole question of like nonconformity and acting within the system and things like that is kind of inherent mm-hmm. to the whole show.
Yes.
And obviously this is like from Talin's point of view, but really when you look at even like Mariner, I mean, that's kind of one of her big sub conflicts. Because on the one hand, she's always railing against Starfleet. And I mean, they really make fun of Starfleet in this show. Like, Starfleet is the most moto, happy-go-lucky, yeah, we're Starfleet mm-hmm. group of people ever. And she'll be the first one to say, yeah, Starfleet's big and stuffy and stupid at times, but it's also the best thing we've got. So it's kind of, there's this interesting, you know, parlay that I think a lot of us have between the idea of you know, being ourselves and self-expression and sometimes the best idea, but also sometimes maintaining some of those structures that kind of underlie everything to keep it running as well. So there you go.
Mariner said, last thing I'm going to say on this, and then we'll move on to something a little bit more fun, because I know mm-hmm. both of you want to talk about Moopsie. So
Moopsie.
So we'll get into that, because I also promised David we'd be done in an hour. So, but the last thing I wanted to say about this was, you know, at one point in the show, I think that the villain at the end, the one that you guys keep fighting about, says to Mariner, don't you hate Starfleet? She's like, no, I love Starfleet, but because I love it, I have to point out its flaws. And I'm making it nicer than the way she says it, but that's just it. Like, just as an aside, as a, you know, as a comparison, I work not in, but with law enforcement, and mm-hmm. I love law enforcement. I think law enforcement's important. And I would never be totally against I'm not one of these defund the police people. Trust me on that. That doesn't mean I don't see its flaws, and I'm happy to talk about them with anyone that'll listen. I've done so over the course of whatever topics we're talking about on this network. I have no problem pointing out the problem with the cops. Do I want the institution? Fuck yeah, I do. I like my stuff, and I want it protected.
Now, Mark, I have to ask a serious question.
Sir?
Mm-hmm. you live in Florida, have any of your law enforcement friends run into any malicious acorns lately?
Acorns?
You haven't heard about this?
Malicious? No. And after the podcast, buddy.
No. This is the thing. We got to talk about that later.
Okay. All right. So I'm just going to let you guys, I'm going to go to you, Andrew. Tell us about the Moopsie.
All right. So there's really not a lot to say about Moopsie other than it's probably one of the better gags that I think they just generated. So I think
so it's adorable and horrifying.
Second or third episode, they have Mariner and Rutherford go onto this collector's or this alien zoo where people have taken a couple of humans hostage or added them as experiments. And there's this cute little fuzzy thing called Moopsie, who only says Moopsie and is very cute.
Cute childlike voice. Yeah.
But we also then find out it drinks bones, to which Mariner says it can't drink bones, to which when it gets out, it finds the zookeeper and sucks out all of its bones to everyone's fur. And of course, Mariner.
Which he looks like an animated piece of corn.
Yeah. Oh, it does. So, okay, quick story on this one. So, again, Alicia and I have been watching this, and I can't remember what they're called, but these are like perfectly oval, kind of fuzzy squishables or squishmallows or something like that. I don't know. Anyway, we have a bunch of those around the house, and there's one that's all white. So one day I grabbed one, walked up to Alicia, Moopsie! And she's like, God damn it, Andrew, that is all I'm going to see every time I see that toy.
Yeah, I swear to God, I saw that story going a different way. So I grabbed the squishmallow. I put it in my wife's face, yelled Moopsie, at which point I don't know what happened next because I was unconscious. turns out she hit me with a rolling pin and ran screaming from the room.
No, the rolling pin was put safely away at that point. So,
okay.
But anyway, so I mean, Moopsie's just one of those probably, maybe we'll take a quick second and talk about the two great gags of this season, which is one, Moopsie. And two, I do declare, sir, that's a dog that's not going to hunt.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because if you didn't, I was going to. Yeah, so Rutherford and Boimler are having, they're fighting in the room, essentially. And they both decide to go on the holodeck, and they both end up being, I think it's Mark Twain.
Yeah,
Mark Twain, yep.
And so they start talking Mark Twain at each other. And in doing so, they are able to resolve the conflict, which... It's not a one-time thing, because then they start doing it to other people. Like, why do we have to dress as Mark Twain? I don't know, but this works somehow. And they do the old-timey voices and the whole thing. I do declare,
good sir, that I have an objection to this here behavior.
I know it's a silly thing, and I really don't want to deconstruct it. I just want to leave it pure and untouched by the hand and mind of Mark Rattledge. But I do have to say, I think if you have to put that much effort into talking something to somebody, like if you guys get into like a fight and like I made you talk like old British. Like, I don't think you could get through it. I think you'd have to get to the resolution because of the effort you're putting into just your speech patterns. Like, you have to stop and think about what it is you're saying, which leads to less fuck you and more, all right, I see what you're saying. I have to see what you're saying. It took you 20 minutes to say it. So, like, it's a funny gag, but it's rooted in something that I think would actually work, as silly as it is.
Well, yeah, and I think it's almost a little bit of a level of it's like, now I bring it up, it kind of reminds, some parts of the show remind me in a very positive way of How I Met Your Mother, where when you have a group of close friends, you get these in-jokes.
Yeah. Well, I have no idea what that's about.
Going and so, yeah, no idea what that has to go on. Dave, how are we doing on Stalker Standard Time, for example?
Oh, boy. Yeah. Mark doesn't know what that is, but...
Yeah, no. Yeah. Well, that's another story for after the podcast, but...
Yes. I remember Stalker Standard Time.
I called, because I do so much podcasting with Jesse, or have over the years. So when we did the ministry review, I said something, and I was like, some have said we have one too many running gags on this network. You know, wink.
Yeah. I will get out the bingo card.
Yeah. Yes. For those that don't know, Andrew, because there is so many running gags on this network over the 20 years we've been doing this, Andrew developed a bingo card. Speaking of which, has anyone watched The Wire lately?
There we go.
Anyway, anything more on Moopsie, David?
Or
Mark Twain?
Yeah. Not much on Mark Twain. I think we've done that as much as can be done. But for Moopsie, I also just love that how like when they discover how horrifying the Moopsie is. And I love how it's just like the most cute, adorable thing, just like rolling around and being absolutely adorable after literally sucking the bones out of another alien creature. You know, I don't know how that works, but it does. And then they're just like basically playing like music heavily inspired, if not ripping off Jurassic Park.
Right.
It was just, yeah, they were just having a ball with it, and
yeah. It was definitely like, hey, let's do a triple episode. Okay, but what can we do with this? I don't know. Make it horrifying. All right.
So, and the horror element just works so well.
It's so funny because, like, again, like, you have to think that some of the writers were smoking pot while working on these scripts.
For sure. Yeah. If not something harder. This is Hollywood.
And so it's like, okay, we want to do a terrible Tribbles episode, but we want to make it also, you know, American Horror Story. All right, well, how do you want to do this? I don't know. What if Hello Kitty sucked your bones dry?
Yeah. I think the trick there is, like, they also keep the Moopsie just so innocent in all this. Like, it's not a malicious creature. It's just eating. This is what it eats.
Yeah, it's a force of nature. All right, guys.
Exactly. I think the Locarno is kind of the last thing I really had on my list.
Yeah, that's going to be the last thing we touched. So over the course
Television. Seriously, guys, make Ferengi Television a real thing.
All right, so hang on. Now I got to put off Locarno just to talk about the Ferengis for a second.
Yes.
Is it weird that the Ferengis were my favorite aliens this entire season? Like,
no, some Ferengis were much fun.
Oh my god! Well, I didn't love the Ferengis in Deep Space Nine. I thought they were kind of annoying. Quark annoyed the piss out of me. I feel like they couldn't figure out what the Ferengis were in Deep Space Nine. Are they bad guys? Are they good guys? Are they mobsters? Are they not? Like, and Quark's a main character in the show, so they kind of had to make him sympathetic. And I love the fact that in Lower Decks, they just went full on, the Ferengis are just ultra-capitalist pieces of shit, and they leaned hard into it.
I think what happened is since like Deep Space Nine aired, real world capitalism has gotten so exploitative and dumb that it's basically become like the perfect parody of itself. Like the best line is, like, they put a paywall on a bomb.
Damn it, you beat my ass off on that.
Yeah, it's like, you know, it's one step too far for, like, real life, but you know that someone would have come up with that idea.
Yeah, I think if they could get away with, like, you know, you know, you have to, like, pay to, like, put ammo into your gun while you're actively in service.
I know for sure, like, in video games, that has been something at least mentioned once by a main executive. It's like, is there a way that we can get them to pay per bullet to reload?
Like, and the thing of it is people totally would.
There are some, yes.
Yeah. Go ahead, Andrew.
Never mind. It was going to be a really stupid joke. Keep going.
No. Nothing I had to say.
Yeah, have you listened to this podcasting network?
I remember an old Chris Rock bit. You don't need gun control. You need bullet control.
Yes.
Make every bullet $500.
Yeah. There'd be no more innocent victims. No more innocent victims.
Like, close to that, guys. Like, come on. Can we get something under control here?
But I love the Ferengis. That's all I was trying to say. I love the Ferengis in this season. Like, the way they talk to each other, the way they talk about stuff. Like, they just, like, there was no sympathy for the Ferengi. As the Rolling Stones once told us that, instead they just like, no, these are shitty people. These are shitty capitalist people. And we're going to write them that way. And I know you guys laughed hard at the Moopsie stuff. I laughed hard at the Ferengi stuff. Like, almost every line coming out of them would crack me up.
The Rom Lita stuff was so brilliant. Cause they were just, it looked like they were fleecing the Admiral the entire time.
Right.
And when the captain finally turns around and says, no, we're cutting this shit out. Here's the subsection that I'm using to beat you. And they said, oh, good. We wanted to make sure whoever we weren't dealing with were rube. So now we can be friends.
Yeah, it was great. That was perfect writing.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's kind of nice. I'm 2 second aside. They kind of wrote all that stuff between the Ferengi becoming more kind of, I'm going to disassociate any political wording with this, progressive near the end of Deep Space Nine. Mm-hmm. And it's like, that kind of takes a lot of the Ferengi, and it kind of warmed my heart to see that they were still, you know, them when we got to Lower Decks.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. All right. So the whole thing with this season is we have a ship that is disappearing crews. You think they're just blasting them into bits, but they're actually just transporting them away. And as it turns out, this is all a plot to create a more communal version of a Starfleet. You know, there were... And it's so funny, and I really got to talk about this. And I'll let you guys comment on it.
It's basically if Mariner went like full on extremist, like just going to build a fleet of Lower Decks.
It's the same place that we get to as human beings. This is what I'm saying. Like, Lower Decks took a very, very familiar, at least in my mind, concept among human beings of Wouldn't it be great if there were no bosses and we were all in charge? First of all, let me tell you, no, it wouldn't. Because I work with a lot of people and most of them are morons and I don't want them to be in charge. They need to be led by the nostrils. Like, not for nothing, but this podcast network, everyone wants to be in charge. Oh, I'm in charge of television, she says. No, you're the fuck not. There's got to be one guy at the top here kind of dragging everybody else along and making sure people don't go off the rails doing nonsense. Like, sorry, a little editorializing here. Mm-hmm. But like, it's very much that idea of like, I hate management. I hate the leadership structure of a paramilitary institution. I wish we could all just be equals. And it works out poorly every single time. Like the idealization of communal living, of, you know, communism, socialism, these are all, as my father would say, these are all wonderful concepts. Mm-hmm. I truly believe that. And as my father would say, they don't work with people for a variety of reasons. And I love the fact that that's what the finale of Lower Decks was dealing with, was the fantasy of a communal paramilitary institution and what an utter failure it becomes. It's fucking awesome, Andrew.
That, and there's always a grifter there who's ready to kind of turn the screws on everybody else.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's funny, I brought up the defund the police thing before, and not to go too far off, but like 5 minutes into the defund the police thing, where like there were these no police zones, these people who wanted this because we can run our community better than being protected by the cops, and there was immediately people committing crimes.
What the hell? Like,
it did not last long
in Seattle or something like that.
The Chaz chop, they kind of rebranded in the middle there. Brief aside, I just find like the first thing they did was they set up concrete barricades and had armed volunteers with guns to make sure that only the people they wanted to come in could come in.
I've had to explain this to my son because he was like, why do we have cops? And I was just like, well, because what's to stop me, who's bigger and stronger than you, from taking your shit? That's what. He was like, oh, okay. Well, he was like, well, I'll just guard my stuff. Well, when are you going to eat and where are you going to get it from? And I have to like explain to him how society evolves.
Yeah. Or here's a real brain burner. What if like 10 of your neighbors decide that they all want to get together and get your stuff?
Right. Yeah. This goes on and on. Mm-hmm. So what did you think of this through thread plot, the slow burn plot, and then the finale, Andrew?
I really enjoyed it. I mean, it was kind of, for one thing, it was kind of fun to go through kind of the stereotypes of each ship, where it's like, you know, the Romulans are, I'm plotting against him, but he's plotting against me, and I will go back to my scheming later, and, you know,
I love how the captain is fully aware that everyone's scheming to overthrow him, but that's the Romulan way.
Exactly. But I mean, it culminates really nicely, I think, both in what you talked about, but I think it's also where we get to the point where, and of course, I can't remember the Klingon's name, the Klingon lower decker would become the captain, and then him and
Mariner
basically meet on what I like to call the planet from Gears of War, because even the rain's trying to kill you. And, you know, we get to that point where, you know, we get to the interior of Mariner's psyche and her problems and everything like that, and how, you know, she kind of does her own self-realization and, you know, actualization to understand that's where I want to be. This is where I want to be. None of this crap that you're throwing at me, Locarno, means a damn thing to me. And I'm going to go back with my friends and go back with the organization that I do trust, acknowledging the flaws that it has.
Yeah.
Locarno is he's a good foil for Mariner in that he's sort of, you can see he's sort of like the dark Mariner where, you know, both became disillusioned with Starfleet, but they both expressed it in different ways. Whereas she managed to still recognize some positivity within Starfleet and go towards it. Whereas he was more like, I'm going to build my own Starfleet with blackjack and hookers.
Yeah, he brats out. You know, like not to put a BDSM spin on this, but he totally. But the difference between Mariner and what are you guys calling him? Lothario? Lotharno?
Locarno.
Locarno. That was close. Locarno is he's throwing a tantrum. He's like, if I was only allowed to do what I wanted to do, then everything would be better now. And I couldn't do it. So that's what's wrong here. And it's like, that's how a child thinks. Mm-hmm. The child thinks, well, if my parents would just let me eat candy and peanut butter all day, then I would be, then I would be happy. It's like, no, you wouldn't. You'd die of diabetes for one thing.
Yeah.
Nick Locarno, actually, the better analogy is Nick Locarno is literally, and they actually show it on the episode, he is literally the guy who in his 30s is still wearing his Letterman jacket from high school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, doesn't that's he call like,
he literally has the Nova Symbol Squadron on his,
and on there's his a mental health technical term for that. It's called arrested development.
Yeah. Cause he was another character from a famous episode of Next Generation. Yep. I think the First Duty, I think, was the episode where.
Yeah. The First Duty.
Yeah, personal where it's like
truth,
he's
historical truth,
yeah.
personal truth. If you aren't aligned to the truth, then you don't deserve to wear that uniform. I only know that because the Greatest Generation uses that drop all the time.
Yes, yes, the Picard song. People Google it; it's awesome. But yeah, that's one of Picard's better speeches. But yeah, the idea is that he's like head of this cadet. Like they're basically like the Blue Angels, Thunderbirds for Starfleet Academy, and yeah, called Nova Squadron. And they do they practice this prohibited maneuver because it's, you know, it's a dangerous maneuver. It's why it's prohibited. And one of the members gets killed, but he tries to cover it up so they don't know that they were doing something they weren't supposed to be doing. And yeah, basically in the end, he's exposed and he's expelled from Starfleet Academy. And this is sort of where he ends up. But the funny thing about that is, in Star Trek Voyager, they had the character Tom Paris, who is very similar, in fact, played by the same actor. But they kind of keep his backstory vague enough where they're very similar. But it was later discovered that they did that because they didn't want to pay that writer a royalty for the character. So they just took the same actor and gave him a different character with pretty much the exact same backstory, basically screwing the guy out of money. So when I saw they brought Locarno back, I'm like, yeah, good on you. Like, hopefully this guy got some money out of this. It's something. It's a nice gesture.
You're saying that Paris and Locarno are basically the same character?
Yeah. I mean, they got the exact same face.
I don't see it.
Yeah, and hence the joke on the bridge.
Okay, Mark's breathing hard. We got to move on.
Yeah. So the in joke aside, that they did kind of use him as someone who also knew Mariner. Seriously, Mariner knows everyone. But as a way to sort of show her difference in how she's matured as a character versus him not maturing.
Yes, that is the funny irony of this is that I think at first blush you think Mariner is the one with arrested development, but what she really is doing a lot of deflection and projection in order to cover the trauma that she suffered. Mm-hmm. One thing I wanted to say about Mariner before we close up is, you know, we talked about how she loves Starfleet, but she's not afraid to see the flaws in it. You know, she's sort of the Greek chorus of the whole thing at times. And that, you know, we talked about her trauma and everything. The other thing about the last thing I want to point out about Mariner is she doesn't want to. She sees what the stress and structure of Starfleet does to her mother.
Yes.
You know, and her mother is sort of the mirror universe, you know, Ghost of Christmas Future version of what Mariner could be. Mm-hmm. If Mariner starts to become, you know, starts to become this uber successful Starfleet person, she's going to be the kind, she may end up becoming the kind of person who has to suck up, cover up, become too full of herself. And as an aside, I like the fact that this is the first season where the mom isn't a complete jackass. Like that episode where she cons the, you know, the information out of the guy, out of the dealer, I think it was like one of the few times I've actually seen the mother be useful in some kind of way instead of, you know, just Mariner's foil. But I did want to point that out really quick, that Mariner is very much aware that she loves her mother and she'd do anything for her, as we saw in the previous season. But she also realizes that she doesn't want to be her mother and that there's got to be a middle ground somewhere. And she just... up to this point, up until I think Ransom sort of pushed her and the thing with Locarno pushed her, I don't think she saw a way to differentiate herself from her mother. So she just ran screaming from it. Okay.
Yeah, I agree with
that. Yeah, no, I think you've got a good point. And she sees aspects of her mother who is a captain. And it's like, you know, if this is what I have to sacrifice to be a captain, I don't want to do that.
Right.
I don't want to have to deal with the politics and responsibility. I just want to help people.
Yeah.
And I think that's a little bit of the brilliance with the pairing with Ransom, because I think I think that's even a choice on the captain's part to say that there's no way I can get along with Mariner, given the fact that we're also mother or daughter. So we're going to let Ransom deal with her.
Yeah.
It becomes her handler. All right. Well, I promised I'd get David out of here in an hour, and I think we've covered the big points of, I think, just thinking back on our different reviews of Star Trek Lower Decks, Dave, this might be the most, like, I don't know if intense is the right word, but this is definitely the most, like, in-depth we've ever gone into this show. This sparked the most conversation because we could have kept going. I'm just cutting it short.
Yeah, no, this was a good season. Like, a lot of solid character work. Like, you can really tell that the show has hit its stride. I think it probably hit its stride last season, but now it's just going. They know who these characters are. They know what their arcs are. Mm-hmm. You know, they've gotten to the point where they're giving us more meat on them to deal with, and Yeah, like it's exceptional. Like it's
yeah.
Yeah, like I said, I prefer the cartoon. It's really good.
I was gonna say, like, if you again, it feels like the Orville, and the Orville is some of the best writing I saw on television when we were reviewing mm-hmm. that. Like, you can absolutely be tricked into thinking this isn't a cartoon, or you know, it is a cartoon, but it is on any other level of any other fantastic show you might see on television. You know, it's definitely one of the best things Paramount Plus has put out since they started doing this new Star Trek. So I'm really happy we talked about it. I really enjoyed the conversation tonight, and I'm sorry, Andrew, I forgot you were on it. But Andrew will be back a week from Thursday because Roadhouse. That's right. We're going to compare the Patrick Swayze to the Jake Gyllenhaal Roadhouse on Trial. It's going to be a civil court edition. That's going to be fun.
One question on that one. Is one of us defending each one of those, or are we just going to talk about it basically?
I don't know what we're doing. I know when Jason and I did it, we just like we kind of talked about the first White Men Can Jump, then we talked about the second, and then we kind of compared them. So we're probably going to just go with that structure. But
okay. You know. All right. I'm going to have to go find that, listen to that just to prep for ahead of things. But
yeah,
I watched the original Roadhouse, which I'd never seen before last weekend, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. So we're going to see how things go this weekend with the new one.
It's on my agenda to watch tomorrow night because I don't have a podcast. And then I'm going to watch the new one a week from tomorrow, right before we do it the following Thursday. So that's that Roadhouse. Stop kicking things, Peter. Okay. So yesterday, speaking of kicking things, Peter, myself and Jesse Starcher talked Sons of Anarchy Season 2. And then Thursday, myself and Sean Comer are going to be doing a triple feature of Jim Jarmusch movies, Coffee and Cigarettes, The Dead Don't Die, and Ghost Dog, starring Forrest Whitaker. Next week, in addition to the Roadhouse on Trial, we've got a review. Okay. We've got a Whiskey Rebellion. The Whiskey Rebellion will be back as a special favorite of Ronnie Adams, assuming he makes it to the show, because Ronnie does not want to come on Damn You Hollywood with the usual Damn You Hollywood people. So I said, well, I am an accommodating friend. I am just a wonderful, magnanimous human being, good to his mother. So I said, here's an entire fucking show, Ronnie. Just you and me and you, naked and tugging on each other's penises, talking Ghostbusters. So we're going to, so he can talk Frozen Empire, Afterlife, Answer the Call, the cartoon, the first two movies, the chapters of real life Ghostbusters, because that's a thing, the conventions, mm-hmm. all of it. We're going to talk all of that on the Whiskey Rebellion a week from yesterday, Monday. And then the actual Ghostbusters Frozen Empire review will be on Tuesday, and that'll be myself, Alexis, and Robert Winfrey, and then the aforementioned Roadhouse review.
I think you guys should just restrict that only to talking about the 2016 version.
Your mother. and so
this man has no dick.
So that's that. I don't know when David is going to be back. I tried to pitch him to do Damsel, Rebel Moon Part 2, and Spaceman, and David said, oh, I have a baby to take care of. No, thank you. So I don't know when David's going to be back, but when David is
we'll figure out something.
David is like Snoop Dogg. He just shows up when he means to, and he smokes your marijuana. So that's what's going on there. All right. Sure. So there's your plugs. I did them for you. So Andrew, why don't you tell us where you roll around with other naked men?
There's no nakedness involved, but anyway.
Oh, that's right. They're wearing tees. I've been
at Esteem and Having Martial Arts here in Calgary. Just in the middle of a move right now, but you can definitely find us on all the major platforms. My instructor, Jay Cooper, also does reality checks with Jay Cooper on YouTube, which is kind of this great behavioral breakdown of kind of real life situations and things like that, which I would highly advise anyone who's kind of even tangentially interested in kind of the realm of self-defense to go check out. He's also got a full training course with a local Calgary company called Budo Brothers, which you can access online. So there we go.
All right.
Roadhouse.
I am at Mark Radulich on TikTok. You can see it on the screen there. But if you listen to this on traditional audio, it's at MarkRadulich on TikTok. That's where we cut 10-minute clips of our shows. Plus, there's my son doing stand-up. And there's me doing karaoke, naked or otherwise. So check all of that out on at Mark Radulich on TikTok, unless Congress bans it, in which case all of my shit will be on Instagram. And I'll be a very sad panda. All right. I'm a sad panda is the phrase that pays here on the Rattled Legend Broadcasting Network. So that brings us to the end of our review of Star Trek Lower Deck Season 4. For Andrew Graham, how could I ever forget you, my love? For Moopsie. The Moopsie. for Mr. Science Fiction David Wright and his lovely daughter, who you cannot see on screen. Be well, be safe, and behave.